Welcome to Central Coast Voices, a program addressing the ramifications of change in our communities and beyond, and how today's choices will impact tomorrow's community. This program is a project of Action for Healthy Communities and provided in collaboration with KCBX and the Community Foundation of San Luis Obispo County. March 31st is Cesar Chavez Day, an American holiday that celebrates the birth and enduring legacy of the labor movement activist. Host Mario Espinoza Kulik and his guests honor the civil rights hero today as they discuss the history of Cesar Chavez and how his legacy continues. This program is made possible through underwriting by Joan Gellert Sargent, and you're invited to participate in today's discussion today by calling in your question to 800-549-8855, and they'll take your question in for the panel, or email your question to voices@kcbx.org. Now, let's join Mario and his guests. Over to you, Mario.
Good afternoon and happy Cesar Chavez Day. My name is Mario Espinoza Kulik, and you're listening to Central Coast Voices on KCBX. Today, March 31st, is Cesar Chavez Day, a national holiday aimed to celebrate the birth and enduring legacy of the American civil rights and labor movement activist, Cesar Chavez. We are joined today by two guests who are here to discuss Cesar Chavez's life and the meaning of his work for farm worker communities on the Central Coast. On today, March 31st, Cesar Chavez would have been 95, celebrating his birthday today. So I'm so honored to be here with you today. And my wanted to share that my own development as a Chicano scholar and an activist has been inspired by Cesar Chavez's story and commitment to La Causa. His work also inspires generations of people all over the world to continue organizing a social movement for educational equity, racial justice, and for labor policies, as well as voting rights. He also has been described by Dolores Huerta as a symbol against xenophobia, hatred, and racism. Our guests for today's show are Mark Grossman, a longtime press secretary, speechwriter, and personal aide to Cesar Chavez and spokesperson for the Cesar Chavez Foundation and the United Farm Workers. Bonita Villalobos Rivera, national vice president and United Farm Workers operations manager for the Central Coast. Welcome, Mark and Bonita. I'd like for us to start to talk a little bit about Cesar Chavez and honor his memory and life. Bonita, what does this day mean to you?
This day is a good recognition for all of the hard work that farm workers do. Most people or the public just don't know really how hard farm workers work to provide food for the nation, to the world. And this one holiday helps us bring to light all of their hard work and, you know, give them some gratitude for everything they do for us.
Thank you. What about you, Mark?
Well, Cesar said many times that if his movement did not survive his death, then all that work and all that sacrifice by so many people would have been in vain. So I think what the UFW is doing today, including on the Central Coast, which boasts the largest concentration of unionized farm workers in the nation, is so fitting and so important.
Thank you. Yes, and you actually worked closely with Cesar Chavez for many years. I wanted to know and ask, how did you get to know him?
Well, I like a lot of young college students my age, back in the late 60s, you know, if you were anywhere on or near campus, you were boycotting grapes or something else. And so I started working on the grape boycott as an undergrad at UC Irvine in the late 60s, which is when I met him in Delano. But I sort of grew up with his older kids. I first got to know him through his eldest son, Fernando, when we were the same age, 19, 20 year olds in college, and we're still close friends. And when I got out of J school, graduate journalism school at UCLA, I figured if I was going to go work as a journalist for nothing anyway, for some dictatorial editor, you know, I might as well do it for someone I like. So I went back to work for Cesar for $5 a week, the same pay he got. And I helped Cesar with his speeches and with his press work. But my most challenging duties by far came as his personal aide. And he took me with him almost everywhere in California, often out of state. Very intense period, mid-70s, brutal schedule, constantly on the road for weeks and months on end, just Caesar, his security detail, his two beautiful German Shepherd dogs, and me in our little two-car caravan. His longest and least known march, 1,000 miles in 1975, to take news of the newly passed farm labor law to workers everywhere in the state, passed through San Luis Obispo, because we walked from the Mexican border at San Ysidro to Salinas, and then from Sacramento to our headquarters near Bakersfield. And this really, you know, I didn't even weigh 130 pounds at the end of that thing. And also, I should add that, you know, adding to the intensity of those days on the road was operating under the shadow of federal agents who were notifying the union about having uncovered plots on Caesar's life. I was with him twice in the 70s when federal agents notified us of assassination plots. First, the Alcohol, Tobacco, and Firearms Bureau, and then the FBI.
How was it moving under those circumstances and with not just Cesar Chavez and yourself, but leading an entire caravan of folks?
Well, we had a core group of marchers who were Cesar and the guys from his detail and some support staff. But then whenever, you know, we were in rural areas, which was through most of our journey, we'd come into a farm worker town and hundreds, sometimes thousands of farm workers would join the march. After averaging about 20 miles a day, then Caesar would do two, three hour rallies with farm workers who were organizing themselves at their companies to have union elections under this newly passed farm labor law. And then we would go back to the house we were staying at, usually a farm worker's home, and he'd have the only real meal of the day, and then have to line up all his calls. This is the era before digital. So he had to run the union at the same time. And I think I learned the location of every payphone in rural California that year. And then at night, I mean, Caesar was 48, not a spring chicken anymore. And he worried about physically keeping up. I had a big tub, a plastic tub, and I'd fill it with water as hot as he could stand it. And we'd go in his room and he'd sit on the bed and put his feet in the water, and along with Epsom salts, that helped. And then he'd lay it down on his back. He'd be out cold in 3-4 minutes. I'd wait a while and I'd dry his feet off, put him in bed and cover him up. And that went on for 2 months. And then the first elections under that law, that was July and August from the march, September, October, it was brutal. We were going from election to election. I mean, didn't have time to read a book for weeks at a time. You know, it was, you never got bored. That's for sure.
Thanks for sharing those memories with us.
But keeping up with him was a challenge. I mean, the guys on his security detail and I, we were 20, 25 years his junior, and we couldn't keep up with him.
Many folks are honor Chavez as a labor leader, but I also know that his vision and goals extended beyond those economic concerns. So I wanted to know, like, how would Cesar Chavez approach community organizing?
Great question, because some people don't know, you know, see, the genesis of Caesar's activism was not union organizing, it was community organizing. And actually, initially, it was the social justice teachings of the Catholic Church that he got from his parish priest in the East San Jose barrio of South Cipuetas in around 1951, Father Donald McDonald. So Caesar brought a different perspective to the labor movement than most labor leaders. He spent 10 years learning the trade, learning how to work with people through the community service organization, which in the 50s and early 60s under Caesar's leadership became the most effective and largest Latino civil rights group in California. And so when the work of building what became the United Farm Workers began in 1962, Cesar and Dolores Huerta, Gilbert Padilla, the other early organizers, some of whom came over from CSO, they had a different view of workers. They knew only a union could remedy the abuses in the fields. But they also believe that workers aren't just workers, that when they leave the job site and all the exploitation there, they return to their homes facing a broad array of other crippling dilemmas, miserable housings, you know, lack of educational opportunities, real discrimination because of language and race, and that it would take more than a union to overcome those dilemmas. It would take a movement. So, you know, it was... the idea, you know, Cesar was criticized then and still is by some of his critics. They say, you know, that he didn't care about organizing a union, which is completely false, because he wanted to organize a social movement. Well, I was with him throughout that decade of the 70s, and 85% of his time was spent on union work. But it's true that you know, he envisioned trade unionism. He saw unions as a community of people, and that he thought the union had to be more than strictly an economic institution, only concerned with wages, hours, working conditions. In other words, only more money and benefits for your own members. And that was why he opposed the Vietnam War in the late 60s, when most major labor leaders supported it. It's why he embraced LGBT rights in the 70s. Long before it was popular. You know, he said, how can you struggle for equal opportunity for your own people when you deny it to others because of who they are? So it really did inform his worldview. And he was very prophetic. He really did have a longer term vision for his own people and for Latinos beyond farm labor. Mm-hmm.
What aspects of his life and legacy that you've already shared with us, like the long and least known march, the 1,000 miles through the coast. But like, is there anything else that people might not know about, maybe about personal sacrifices and humility?
Cesar would often give up secretaries or office workers. You know, when they're good, you naturally want to hold on to them, but not Cesar. If he spotted a young people with talent, especially if they came from farm worker or working class family, he would convince them they could become something else, accountants, administrators, negotiators. And he really pushed people to do that. Sure, he wanted results at the office, but he saw the greater good of helping people fulfill their dreams that some of them didn't even know they had at the time. He literally gave hundreds of young women and men opportunities no one would have given Cesar Chavez when he was a young migrant kid with an eighth grade education. And thousands more, like me, credit the experience and training of working with Cesar and the movement for lifetimes of social, political activism and professional success as well. So, and when you really think about it, wasn't that what he wanted for farm workers too? The chance to negotiate with their employers as equals across a bargaining table so they wouldn't have to just take orders all their lives. That's what he was about.
I'm Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, your Central Coast listener-supported radio station. The voices with mine today are Mark Grossman, a longtime press secretary, speechwriter, and personal aide to Cesar Chavez, and spokesperson for the Cesar Chavez Foundation and the United Farm Workers. Also, Bonita Villalobos Rivera, National Vice President and United Farm Workers Operations Manager for the Central Coast. We're talking about the life of Cesar Chavez and his legacy for farm worker communities on the Central Coast. And in honor of Cesar Chavez Day, we're doing this when he would have been 95 on this day. 60 years after Chavez co-founded the United farm workers with Dolores Huerta, the organization continues to lead a social movement that uplifts the rights, dignity, and lives of farm workers and their families. We invite and welcome you to bring your questions or comments about today's topic to our guests. To do that, you can call 805-549-8855, or you can email them to voices@kcbx.org. Cesar Chavez is widely known for co-founding the United Farm Workers, or UFW, and his work for farm workers and their families. I want to know more about this place in history and La Causa. Many folks may not know what La Causa is, who are listening. In English, it's translated to the cause. But if anyone could answer for us, how was Cesar Chavez using those tactics and strategies for bringing awareness to La Causa, and what did that mean to the communities he was advocating for?
Well, let me take a shot. There were certain historical innovations that Cesar pioneered that really were, some of them were very foreign to the labor movement. You know, there was nonviolence, which was not kind of a hallmark of the American labor movement. Cesar, from his youth, read about Gandhi, carefully followed Dr. King's career, beginning with the Montgomery bus boycott in the mid-50s. And he believed, you know, he was a devout Catholic who also practiced Zen Buddhism and believed that human life is a precious thing, a gift from God, and no one had the right to take it for any reason. But he also had a practical side of it, because he believed nonviolence is more powerful than violence. And that, you know, remember the times, the Vietnam War was raging, the ghettos were ablaze with civil disorder. And Cesar believed the American people were yearning for an alternative to violence. And that if they saw the poorest of the poor organizing themselves nonviolently against great odds, they would respond. And they did. The boycott. Labor had not really used boycotts in a big way. Cesar believed that the odds were stacked against farm workers in the fields. The strikes were all successful initially, but you were confronting in rural California a society not that different than Alabama and Mississippi in the 60s, you know, where all the social, economic, political institutions were aligned against the farm workers, the cops, the courts. And so by transferring the fight from the fields, where the odds were stacked against farm workers, to the cities, by creating perhaps the broadest coalition in the history of the American civil rights movement through the boycotts of grapes and other products, that was a key to success. It was a multiracial struggle. You know, people think that Latinos began the Delano grape strike, and they're wrong. It's begun by Filipino grape pickers who walked out on strike and came to Cesar's mostly Latino union and asked them to join their picket lines. And even though Cesar and his colleagues believed they were years away from being ready for that, but Cesar had studied history. He knew that the way that agriculture broke strikes and crushed unions for 100 years had been by pitting the races against each other, Filipinos breaking the Mexican strikes and vice versa. And so Cesar, Dolores, Gilbert, they didn't think they had a choice, and they took a chance and they took a leap of faith and then just stepped into history. So all those things were historical innovations that the farm worker movement pioneered. And I think is one of the reasons, some of the reasons why they succeeded, where people who had a lot better educations and a lot more money had tried and failed for 80 years to organize farm workers.
Thanks, Mark. I want to just take a quick pulse check and have folks silence their phones, and then we can continue with the rest of our show. And I also wanted to say that through what you just shared with us, it made me think about how Cesar Chavez had not just led large grassroots campaigns with the UFW, but also with a community service organization. And as you mentioned, solidarity was important to Cesar Chavez, and working in unity with other groups that were historically pit against one another by employers. But I wonder, how was Cesar Chavez's leadership influenced by other figures like Dolores Huerta and Larry Leon?
Cesar, when he was alive, he rarely let anybody name anything for him. If he was here today and saw all the places, things that are named, that are in his name, he'd probably scold people. You know, he'd say, don't you have something better to do with your time? And he was often embarrassed to be singled out for praise in public, because he knew there were so many others who made tremendous sacrifices and achieved great things, but whose names are largely lost to history. Dolores is not. Larry Leong is becoming a little better known now, but the fact is there were countless women and men who, you know, did accomplish things they never thought they could do. Setting out across America and Canada and Western Europe to organize an international great boycott that one national poll in 1975 showed 17 million Americans were boycotting grapes. Standing up to what was the most powerful industry in California in its day. So I think, you know, Cesar said his job as an organizer, you know, was helping ordinary people do extraordinary things. And he convinced people in the union that their job was vitally important. Didn't matter if you were an attorney in court or cooking in the strike kitchen. He made people believe in themselves, people who almost no one thought were very important. And he gave them faith they could challenge and overcome one of the wealthiest industries in the state. And maybe that's why he was so successful. You know, if you didn't know who he was pretty easy to lose in a crowd. He looked and dressed and talked and behaved pretty much like the people he was committed to helping. And farm workers and Latinos especially would look at him and they'd say to themselves and each other, you know, he could be my father, my grandfather, my son, my brother. And if Cesar Chavez can do these great things, maybe I can too.
That grape strike that you mentioned was about a total of 5 years. How do you sustain a mass of supporters for that long and what contributed to that perseverance and endurance for the boycott?
Outthinking and outworking your opposition. And that was another great strength of nonviolence. You know, nonviolence, Cesar thought, it's hard to defend academically. It looks weak rhetorically, but in practice, it's very powerful. And so that's what they did, is they outmaneuvered. You know, Gandhi had a term called moral jujitsu, you know, that you outsmart, you outwork, you outmaneuver your opposition. And, you know, one of Cesar's missions in life, he thought, within the movement, was getting people to think outside the box, to not just be trapped by what everyone else had done for years, to try new things, to get people to become agents of change. And it were those qualities that enabled the grape strikers to prevail through the longest labor strike in American history up until that day.
Juanita, I'm wondering if you could share with us what impacts might have the UFW had, not only then, but today on farmworking communities.
Well, I mean, you can see the impact that they have had, especially in the Central Coast, in terms of the benefits that provide the union contracts provide, and the knowledge that workers gain in learning to negotiate what they feel they deserve So it's a great legacy to see the farm workers at the table with their employer negotiating terms and conditions of their employment. I think one of the major things is the healthcare that farm workers are able to get through their contracts, the medical insurance that they are able to have. And that's, you know, kind of a stress relief, especially in this day and age, that, you know, they have the medical insurance, the coverage to be able to take care of their family and their health. So that's definitely one of the benefits that we've seen over the years that farm workers under contract have been able to obtain.
What would you say about non-union workers that may not be part of the UFW or have not unionized? How do they benefit from the work of the UFW?
You know, when we're in a strong campaign or we have a strong presence in certain areas, the fear of some of the employers that their workforce is going to be unionized, they start to raise wages. They start to maybe give out bonuses or do other things to make workers happy, for workers to believe that, oh, okay, we don't need a union. But in a wider spectrum throughout California, a lot of the legislation that has been passed for farm workers has been through the advocacy of the union. The most recent one is the heat regulations. And so even non-union workers benefit from that. After a certain temperature, the employer is required to have shade, which in this day and age, you would think that you would just automatically want to take care of your workforce. And to have to regulate to have shade and fresh water, it's kind of a shame. But in the end, you know, we have been able to obtain that for workers, even non-union workers benefit from that.
We're going to take a short break to hear from our team and a little bit of music. But first, we're currently hosting a pledge drive here at KCBX, and today is Matching Pledges Day. For every dollar that you pledge, we will match. Thanks for helping support programs like this one for our listeners. Back over to you, Brad.
And thank you. We will resume our program in just a moment. And let me expand on that just a little bit. Thank you very much for leading me into that, Mario. You know, if you've donated to KCBX during our spring pledge drive, or if you're an ongoing supporter, we want to say thanks. If you've not yet renewed your support or donated for the first time, today, as Mario said, is a great way to do it, because every dollar that you donate to KCBX today is going to be matched dollar for dollar all day long, with $20,000 donated to our challenge fund by other listeners. It's a great opportunity. It will also help us reach our goal by making your donation count twice as much. Our goal is $240,000. That's what's needed to support your public radio station in the months ahead and to bring you programs community-focused, just like this one, Central Coast Voices. So please don't wait for a better time. Right now is your opportunity during this spring pledge drive to really make your donation go twice as far. And once again, thanks to all of our Challenge Fund donors who've made it possible. Their donations haven't been counted towards our goal yet, and that can't happen until their funds are matched with your new or renewal pledge now. So please don't let this opportunity go to waste. Donate at kcbx.org or call us right now at 800-549-8855. Our show continues in just a moment.
I'm Maria Hinojosa. Next time on Latino USA, the state of Texas versus Melissa Lucio, the first Latina on death row in Texas, and her family's efforts to stop her execution.
You generally do not see the death penalty meted out to people who have good representation. The death penalty is for the worst lawyering.
That's next time on Latino USA.
On the next Fresh Air, how Ukraine is fighting the digital war against Russia. Time Magazine's Vera Bergengruen says Ukraine's 31-year-old cyber chief is recruiting a citizen IT force to help blunt Russian disinformation, galvanize international support, and get tech companies to block services in Russia. Join us.
That's ahead on our Thursday here on KCBX. Latino USA comes up today at 2, followed by Fresh Air at 3, then Marketplace at 4. Right now, let's return to Mario Espinoza-Kulik and his guests on Central Coast Voices. Back to you, Mario.
Hi, all. I'm Mario Espinoza-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. The voices with mine today are Mark Grossman, a longtime press secretary, speechwriter, and personal aide to Cesar Chavez, and spokesperson for the Cesar Chavez Foundation and the United Farm Workers. Also, Bonita Villalobos Rivera, National Vice President and United Farm Workers Operations Manager for the Central Coast. We're talking about the life of Cesar Chavez and his legacy for farm worker communities on the Central Coast in honor of Cesar Chavez Day. 6 years have passed from the time that the United Farm Workers Movement was founded. And this organization continues to lead a social movement that uplifts the rights, dignity, and lives of farm workers and their families. You can learn more about the Cesar Chavez Foundation on their website at www.chavezfoundation.org and follow them on Instagram at Chavez Foundation. You can learn more about the United Farm Workers on their website at www.ufw.org and follow them on Twitter at UFW Updates or on Facebook as UFW or at United Farm Workers. I'd like to remind our listeners that if you have a question for today's guests or a comment for our discussion, we would love to hear from you. Call 805-549-8855, or you can email questions and comments to voices at kcbx.org. We'll get them on the air. In this next section, I'd like to talk more about the continuation of the UFW's work in our communities today. One impact of the UFW that we can see here locally on the Central Coast is that it holds the largest concentration of unionized farm workers in the United States. Bonita, could you share some of the current work that the UFW is involved in on the Central Coast?
Sure. We are present in our mushroom industry, the vegetables, the strawberries, and some wine grape in the Central Coast. We have, I can't remember the exact number, but we have about 3,000 members in the Central Coast area. And we've had a good concentration of year-round workers that are able to, work under unionization.
And what are some of those issues that affect farm workers today that contribute to the organizing and work that is happening around the UFW?
You know, even though we've made lots of strides and passed lots of legislation, we still face, or the workers still face, discrimination, retaliation, favoritism, non-pay of their wages. There's still the vulnerability that a lot of farm workers have. And there's still that fear of speaking out and speaking up and, you know, fighting for your rights, because there is that fear of deportation. A lot of the farm workers are immigrants and undocumented immigrants. And so until they are able to live here and without fear of deportation, that's something that the employers would still be able to abuse them and use that as a fear tactic to make sure that they don't unionize.
How does the UFW help farm working communities combat that fear?
Well, part of it is an education. Part of it is us reaching out and working with other organizations, like our sister organization, the United Farm Workers Foundation, to educate people on their rights with other agencies and state agencies that they can go to seek out remedies, wage and hour discrimination, that sort of thing. OSHA for health and safety, things like that. So we definitely go out and educate workers on their rights, and then hopefully they unionize, they band together and become one. But that's how we work out with our community.
You should add too, from the public policy perspective, the UFW has been leading the national movement for immigration reform for a number of years now, along with our sister organizations, many Latino civil rights groups. And just a year ago, the U.S. House of Representatives passed on a bipartisan vote the Farm Workforce Modernization Act, which is a negotiated bill negotiated by the UFW on behalf of its allies, other farm worker organizations, and the national, the major national grower associations. And that bill would allow undocumented farm workers in this country now, as well as their immediate family members, to earn the temporary legal status and then permanent legal status and a path to citizenship. And that would go so far in alleviating the vulnerability that so many people feel because of their immigration status. It would say that if you have a demonstrated employment history in this country, which most immigrant farm workers do now, that once you pass criminal background national security checks, you could get temporary legal status. And that would just go so far in alleviating people's fears. And once that happens, people could do a lot for themselves. If it weren't for that crippling fear that they have every day when they go to work, not knowing whether they're going to be able to return to their children in the evening. And other stuff, other issues. In 2019, the UFW carried legislation at the state capitol to ban chlorpyrifos, which is the toxic chemical that damages the brains and lowers the IQs of infants and young children. And when we were able to move those bills through the legislature, that's when Governor Newsom issued executive action eliminating the use of chlorpyrifos that year. Since then, one of the biggest manufacturers announced they were going to discontinue its use. And we're fighting now at the national level with the Biden administration to get similar action through U.S. EPA. So, Bonita was mentioning earlier in response to your question about non-union workers, so much of the legislative and regulatory victories the UFW has won in California really affects non-union workers more. Because union workers, they have protections through the collective bargaining process. They have a voice on the job. But at non-union companies where workers don't have that advantage of unionization, the way they get protected is through regulatory and legislative reforms. This year, January 1st, for the first time in American history, in California, farm workers got the right to receive overtime pay after 8 hours a day or 40 hours a week because of a 2016 law the UFW got passed in California. And we also got this one, the same law adopted in Washington State and just a few weeks ago in Oregon. There's a lot of progress that's been made. There's still so much work more to be done. But, as Bonita said, when the union is active in a region, growers know if they have to be more careful how they treat and pay people, or else it gives the union opportunities.
Definitely. I appreciate that highlighting how legislative opportunities have sort of had a more broader effect, not just to union workers, but also to our non-union working communities. One thing that I think is relevant here too is farm workers' access to housing and childcare as well. How do you see those issues in the work that the UFW does and the work that goes into and the decision-making process that goes into farm work?
Well, you know, I also do work with the Cesar Chavez Foundation, which was founded around the same time in the 60s by many of the same people who helped found the UFW and under a different name then. But a couple of its main programmatic areas is affordable housing, and it has built and manages and renovates very high quality, amenity intensive affordable housing for both families and for seniors in four states. Now about 20,000 people in 5,000 units in about four dozen communities, affordable housing communities, and people move into that housing from very substandard conditions. And now is not just in rural areas, but in urban areas too. So that's a huge operation and very successful by the Chavez Foundation. They probably has a housing portfolio of about $900 million and a pipeline of new projects that's never ending. Operates a series of educational radio stations, eight stations in four states now, including one in Salinas, about 1.5 million listeners and followers, state-of-the-art news, educational programming, attracting the audience with very popular regional Mexican music, and now experimenting in a few stations in English because the children and grandchildren of farm workers have very different musical tastes and methods of obtaining information and entertainment. So there are two experimental English radio stations that are targeted for young Latinos whose parents and grandparents were farm workers, but they are either bilingual or sometimes monolingual English. And supplying them with the same services in terms of getting information and getting important education about consumer issues, labor issues, health issues. That's another big programmatic area. And also educational opportunities, do tutoring, academic tutoring after school and summer programs that the Chavez operates mostly in California and Arizona.
Do you have anything to add to that, Bonita? Maybe anything that the UFW might do that that might not be as obvious to our listeners?
Off the top of my head, in terms of housing, we do a lot of advocacy for H2A workers. We have H2A workers that come to our office and either complain about the housing and the meals that they receive under the program. And we try to help resolve any issues that we can. Sometimes they're bigger than we can, but we bring knowledge and voice to the situations and try to remedy them as much as we can usually on a case-by-case basis.
Thank you. I'm Mario Espinosa-Kulik with you for Central Coast Voices on KCBX, Central Coast Public Radio, your listener-supported radio station. If you recently joined us for today's show and want to listen to the entire broadcast, you can. It will be available on our website at www.kcbx.org under the On Demand tab. Click on Central Coast Voices and you will find this show and many others to choose from. The voices with mine today are Mark Grossman, a longtime press secretary, speechwriter, and personal aide to Cesar Chavez and spokesperson for the Cesar Chavez Foundation and the United Farm Workers. Juanita Villalobos Rivera, a National Vice President and United Foreign Workers Operations Manager for the Central Coast. We're talking about the life of Cesar Chavez and the legacy of the farmworking communities and the impacts that the United Farm Workers have had on our farmworking communities and families. We still have a little more time for your email questions or comments at voices@kcbx.org. In this last part, I want to focus on how people can get involved and take action in support of farm workers and their families. Currently, the UFW is supporting the California Agricultural Labor Relations Voting Choice Act. Bonita, can you share a little bit about what this bill would do?
This bill will alter a little bit the Agricultural Labor Relations Act that was came into legislation in the late 70s. It'll essentially give the right to farm workers to vote by mail from the ease of their home. Traditionally, elections for unionization are on site at the employer's site, right? So workers sometimes get intimidated and either don't participate and or change their vote because supervisors are watching or array of things that can intimidate them. So this new legislation will allow them to have a mail-in type ballot. Just like the regular general elections that we have and that we are able to use as voters, general population. So it would be it'd be great that the farm workers would be able to have the same access to voting as the general public. And that's essentially, but Mark might have a few more details, expressive details on the law.
Well, this is a bill that was passed by the legislature last year. The governor Newsom vetoed after he refused to meet with elected farm worker leaders. The bill's been reintroduced this year with 50 co-authors. And today, farm workers have assembled at 13 locations in rural and urban California because their repeated requests to meet with Governor Newsom to discuss this issue that vitally concerns them and their families, he declined to meet with them. On Cesar Chavez Day, he issued a proclamation today, but he declined to meet with them, with the elected representatives of farm workers. These are the men and women who have been elected by their co-workers to lead the union at their companies. You know, we gathered at the state capitol. We were gathering in Salinas, in San Jose, in San Francisco, in Northern California. And, you know, we need the governor to sign that bill. And the other thing that was announced at these events today is that we're asking people to join farm workers on a march this coming summer, retracing the historic trek that Cesar led in 1966 from Delano to Sacramento to urge Governor Newsom to sign this bill. It is a, you know, the industrial unions, they can vote. Those workers can often vote by mail-in ballots. It was these voting choices that farm workers seek to enjoy and that California political voters have enjoyed for decades that Governor Newsom used to defeat the Republican recall last September. And yet he's denying farm workers those same rights that everyone else benefits from.
Thanks for sharing the update with us and about the fight for a fair voting choice that everybody has been able to enjoy, right? Why can't the governor sign that bill? As Mark said, they will be having a march from Delano to Sacramento this summer. Are there any specific dates or like a time that this might happen?
You're probably looking at July or August. You know, it'll be timed to when the bill is going to be headed to the governor's desk. And at this point, we're just not sure yet. But we will be putting that out in plenty of time for people to join us. And it'll be, 350-mile trek in the heat of summer up the Central Valley from Delano to the state capitol in Sacramento. And, the governor will have to face that decision again.
Are there any other opportunities for our listeners to get involved in supporting farm workers and their families, or even the movements that are happening with the UFW fighting for their rights?
Well, you mentioned the UFW website, ufw.org, and urge people to go there. And, everyone can do something very simple. They can sign up for the UFW's free listserv, and they can get regular updates on UFW campaigns, such as for the Agricultural Labor Relations Voting Choice Act, or for campaigns by workers to get heat rules nationwide, or to fight pesticides, by participating. You can sign petitions, you can call your legislators. We send out appeals regularly. Same thing on Facebook and Twitter. Get in touch. In my day, when I worked on the Great Boycott as a college undergrad in the late 60s and early 70s, you had to spend weeks, in front of supermarkets getting people to sign petitions, before you got a decent number of signatures. Today, it can be done in days, in hours. And the UFW has developed an extensive, very successful social media operation that mobilizes people, that gives people opportunities to make small sacrifices, by signing petitions and making calls on behalf of the poorest of the poor. It works.
You all heard it from Mark just now, but you can learn more about the Cesar Chavez Foundation on their website at www.chavezfoundation.org. Them on Instagram at Chavez Foundation. You can also learn more about the United Farm Workers on their website at www.ufw.org and follow them on Twitter at UFW Updates or on Facebook at United Farm Workers UFW. I'd like to turn it back to our guests and share anything that we might not have touched in our conversation together today. And if there's anything you'd like to share out. Bonita, do you want to start?
It's been a long struggle for farm workers through many decades, and we've made a lot of strides. And it's really good to hear when young people are still involved and read about Cesar and the movement and Dolores Huerta and continue to participate and want to make change. So I encourage the young people to reach out and be part of their community and learn about the struggles of others and do whatever they can to help and make a change for the better.
How about you, Mark?
I remember 43 years ago, a reporter with a national magazine came out to California to follow Cesar around for a few days to union marches and rallies and meetings with farm workers. Whenever he was with workers and their families, they would come up to him for autographs on leaflets or flags, shirts, all manner of things. And fathers would use these little old-fashioned Instamatic cameras to take pictures of Cesar with their children. And later during an interview, this reporter, she asked Cesar, what accounts for all the affection and respect farm workers show you in public? And Cesar hesitated and smiled, and he just said, the feeling is mutual.
Is there, any favorite, like a quote that you want to share with us, Mark? I know you've known Cesar for a long time. So just before we end our time together, Is there one favorite quote or like another fun memory that you like to share with us?
Yeah, at the end of Caesar's first long public fast of 25 days to reaffirm the Union's commitment to nonviolence, Caesar said that it's my deepest belief that only by giving our lives do we find life. And he said that the strongest act, the manliness, is sacrificing ourselves for others in a totally nonviolent struggle for justice, that to be a man is to suffer for others, and God help us to be men. And he wasn't being sexist, because those strikers that were talking about resorting to violence then were mostly young male strikers. You know, Caesar spent his career speaking out against machismo and always working to bring women into the union as organizers, staff, leaders. And whenever he spoke to farm workers, a farm worker audience, he would spend some of his remarks directly speaking to the men and boys in the audience. And he would talk to them about what it means to be a man. And he'd say, being a man isn't getting drunk Saturday night at the bars and coming home and pushing your wife and kids around. It's taking a stand for the union. It's speaking back to the foreman and supervisors. It's making a better life for your family. So, you know, that's why Caesar had a different view of manliness than is popular, even in today's popular culture.
I'd like to express my profound gratitude to our guests today. Mark Grossman, a longtime press secretary, speechwriter, and personal aide to Cesar Chavez and spokesperson for the Cesar Chavez Foundation and the United Farm Workers. Bonita Villalobos Rivera, National Vice President and United Farm Workers Operations Manager for the Central Coast. We've been discussing the life of Cesar Chavez and his legacy of farm worker communities on the Central Coast, and also honoring his memory and life on Cesar Chavez Day, where he would have been 95 this year. You can continue the conversation with these incredible organizations on social media. The Cesar Chavez Foundation is on Instagram at Chavez Foundation, and you can follow the UFW on Twitter at UFW Updates, or connect on Facebook as at United Farm Workers at UFW. We hope you will join Central Coast Voices for our next show on Thursday, April 7th at 1 p.m., where I'll be speaking with Tom Brandenberry, founder of the executive director of Los Amigos de Guadalupe, Alma Hernandez, president of Los Amigos de Guadalupe, and Daniel Segura, youth organizer with Central Coast Alliance United for a Sustainable Economy, or CAUSE. We will discuss how Central Coast nonprofits are working to increase access to recreation services in rural communities. Central Coast Voices has been sponsored by Action for Healthy Communities and the San Luis Obispo Community Foundation in collaboration with KCBX. I'm your host, Mario Espinosa-Kulik, and thank you for joining us today. Dina,